It's music from Paul Clark, Fly On Sweet Angel. That's one of his newer recordings. And yeah, that's the same Paul Clark you may remember from the Jesus people, the Jesus music era of the early 70s. In fact, that whole music set from such folk. Annie Herring sang for us, You Came Shining. We heard from Love Song, Chuck Gerard and Company. Remember Love Song? And welcome back. 14 minutes now after the hour. It's a Monday here along the Broken Road, and we're joined by Heike Dodge. Heike, happy Monday. Welcome to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Haven't heard from you in a few days. It's just nice to have you back.
I've had my head buried in the chicken coop in the garden lately.
Ooh,
I'm sorry. That probably paints an ugly picture. Well, sorry about that.
And Dr. Don joins us too. Dr. Don Clark from Garden Valley, Texas. He is a member of the board at Creation Moments and our resident biochemist. And Don, we take up a topic today that really Heike recommended to us. It's an article over at BuzzFeed.com. It's about 8 foods we eat in the U.S. that are banned in other countries. And we've talked from time to time, and in recent weeks, really rather frequently, about genetically engineered foods. These are not necessarily genetically engineered foods, but they're foods and additives that, well, here's an example. I'm looking at the article now, and there's a big colored picture of what appears to be Fruit Loops, a big close-up of all those little oat O's in bright colors, greens and yellows and oranges and purples and blues. And the headline says, artificial food dye. Make your food pretty. That inhibits nerve cell development. Or here's another one, Olestra or Olean. Lowers calorie counts while causing vitamin depletion and anal leakage. Ew. And they've got a thing of Ruffles picture, the potato chips. Fat-free products, apparently, hold some threats for us. In this case, created by Procter & Gamble as a substitute for cooking oil, Olestra robs your body, it says here, of its ability to absorb vitamins. And cramps, one of the other side effects. And, you know, I think I've seen that on the label as a warning there. Here's another one. Brominated vegetable oil makes food dye stick to liquids, but also may cause birth defects and major organ damage. And here's a close-up picture of a line of Mountain Dew in all its multiple flavors, because it's used in citrus-flavored sodas. Why it's dangerous? Well, it doesn't really say. It says it's a chemical used to stop carpets from catching on fire. It says it's been linked to major organ system damage, birth defects, growth problems, schizophrenia, hearing loss, banned in over 100 countries, but not here. Don, I have to ask you, if there are such things that are in our foods commonly, and they're legal here, but not legal elsewhere, is that because there's a difference in the scientific view of these ingredients and foods, or is it because of the way we handle, in other words, politics somehow has gotten into this? What do you think?
Well, it really is a complex question. I mean, the simple answer is yes, politics is involved, but the more complex issue is a lot of these compounds that are mentioned here, they're synthetic. Obviously, the brominated hydrocarbons that are used in the soft drinks, in particular, to help suspend the coloring agents. And the coloring agents themselves are all synthetics. And a lot of, like obviously, Olestra is synthetic. A lot of these things, like the food colorings, are on what's called the GRAS list. That is the generally recognized as safe and effective, or safe at least. Mm-hmm. I don't know how effective they are, but generally recognized as safe. And once a compound or compounds or a food item gets placed in that list, it is very difficult to get it off. So a lot of these things have been grandfathered in, and until they start killing people, unfortunately, they probably won't be taking off unless there's a major push by the public to get the FDA to do something about it.
Well, that would take something dramatic, wouldn't it? I mean, if these ingredients cause slow degradation of some biological system or just slow damage over a long period of time, we're likely not to notice it.
Well, that's correct. And it takes, you know, thousands, if not millions of people, you know, taking these products. And then you don't have a controlled situation. You don't have a controlled study. And in general populations, you know, people are getting sick all the time, and to blame it on a particular ingredient is very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. So, and the industry is not spending any money to do any of these studies. So either you have to have a watchdog group that solicits donations from people that goes out and does the research, which is usually involves many, many people. You know, sometimes long periods of times, and those clinical studies could run in the millions, if not the hundreds.
Well,
are they
doing this in Europe but not here? I mean, why are there things that are illegal here that are legal there? Maybe that's the other side of the coin. Do we know?
Oh, there probably are. Europeans tend to be a lot more skeptical than us Americans. Mm-hmm. And usually what happens with a lot of these ingredients, they get approved in the United States, and a company tries to get it approved in Europe, and they say, well, you know, show me your data, and their data is not all inclusive. And so they send the company back to the research labs, and if they don't, you know, they can't come up with the right type of research, then the product doesn't get approved over there. Or if anecdotal type of information comes out that, gee, this causes a problem, then the Europeans are more likely to say, well, wait a minute, we don't want this, you know, on our food shelves at all. Mm-hmm. I think, as we've spoken before, most Europeans, or at least a lot of Europeans, are more selective about what they eat. And we tend not to be.
Well, and I know we've had visitors here who will come in and talk about, you know, is there a restaurant around that I'm talking about visitors from Europe in particular. They'll come to the Lakes Country up here in East Dakota and say, boy, we've been wanting to come here for a long time. Where can I go find this food or that food? Or they'll talk about, well, I can't eat anything here because it's all genetically engineered, or it's got this or that ingredient. So it's apparently on the minds of people, certainly those who are traveling back and forth between Europe and here. But it's not just Europe either. It's Japan, and it's a lot of other countries in the world. Here's a mention of potassium bromate, or bromated flour. It says it's great for impatient bakers, bad for your kidneys and your nervous system. It's found in wraps, rolls, breadcrumbs, bagel chips, flatbreads. It's derived from the same harmful chemical as brominated vegetable oil. It's used to decrease baking time and reduce cost. The problem is, it's been linked to kidney damage, cancer, and nervous system damage. Now, they don't give details of these scientific studies or medical studies here. It's banned in Europe, Canada, and China. Do we take their science seriously here?
Well, it's interesting. When I was working, you know, in the pharmaceutical industry or biotechnology industry, and I was dealing with both the European Union and the folks, the regulatory folks in the UK, they are. They will not just take the U.S. data, you know, on itself. I mean, they like to see data from their own country by their own researchers. Japan, in particular, that's the case. We will take data from other countries. And there was a big push when I was in the industry, but 15 years ago, there was a big push to try to unify the regulations across all of these countries. And I don't know how far they've gotten in that process, but, you know, the pride of the country seemed to always get in the way.
It gets in the way. Our scientists are better than yours.
Yeah, the type of thing. Mm-hmm. So, and not to say that, you know, one system is better than the other. I think they're all, you know, flawed from one perspective. I know that in the UK, the chemistry aspect of your regulatory filing was much more scrutinized than it was here in the States. But, you know, the safety studies was very much scrutinized in Japan and other European countries. So it's kind of hard to say why there's, you know, a major difference in some of these products. But like I said, some of them have been on the market for years, and once they get on the market, it's really hard to get off. So if you're trying to introduce a new product, you may have a more difficult time now, both in the U.S. and Europe. But once something gets on the market,
once it's already mainstream and it's got a bazillion dollars invested in it in products and advertising and promotion and shelf space in grocery stores, it's kind of there forever because it's a very expensive
proposition.
Right,
and then the customers are looking for the Fruit Loops or they're looking for these potato chips that, in theory, you know, won't make them fat. Well. Mm-hmm. It's not the fat in the potato chips that's making you fat. That's the other fallacy. J&J kind of got off on that particular misinformation and developed a product. Now, the other thing in Europe is it seems that people are much more sophisticated in what they're eating. I mean, you know, most, as you said, the visitors that you have met who've come over to this country from Europe tend to know about genetically modified foods and not only know about them, they want to eat them as well as, you know, other products. And so somewhere along the line, somebody's doing some education that we apparently aren't doing here.
Yeah, Heike, let me ask you. You're a young mother. You got kids and a family to look after, and I know you raise a lot of your own food. Do the things on this list in this article worry you at all?
Absolutely. The first one, artificial food dye, way back in the 70s and 80s, my sister had to eliminate all food dyes from her diet because she was basically a small Tasmanian devil running around. Ooh. She was just completely out of control and, you know, atypical to what was normal for her. And the doctor said, pull Jell-O and Kool-Aid and all the things that were kind of ramping up in the late 70s and early 80s. Which wasn't as difficult to do back then for my mom. She just eliminated things that didn't have a natural color to them. And then my sister kind of got back to being a normal kid. She wasn't just flying off the handle and uncontrollably emotional and hyper. She was terribly hyper. But at this point, you can pick something up off the shelf that looks like it's a natural color, and unless you read the label, you don't realize that there are dyes in it. For instance, most people don't realize that butter, when you go to the store and you buy a pound of butter, it's actually been dyed a particular color. Because when the margarine industry ramped up years ago, they got it regulated so that they owned a particular food shade. And margarine is artificially colored one color, which is actually closer to what butter is. And butter has to be unnaturally colored away from its natural color because margarine owns that color. And because nobody makes their own butter anymore, you know, two generations removed from that, nobody knows what butter's supposed to look like anymore. And that was just totally a marketing ploy. There's no reason why we can't all be the same color, butter and margarine and all that. But, you know, it's in the minds of the consumer as to what looks most tasty. And the difference between what food looked like in the 60s and what food looks like now, you know, I mean, the potassium bromate and all the flours that are artificially accelerated, so to speak. You know, breads look different now than they did back then. Remember when Wonder Bread really hit the market, and all 30s, of a sudden you have a generation of people that grew up expecting white bread to be the healthier version, or the healthier, or more. Maybe it wasn't healthier, but the version for people who had more wealth or affluence. Mm-hmm. And so then you start getting into that whole psychology piece. Do you remember when breastfeeding went out of fashion, and it was considered only appropriate for poor people who couldn't afford to buy formula? I want to say that was kind of just post-World War II.
So social attitudes are part of this then.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, like the article says, we're impatient bakers. We want our bread to rise quickly. But if we would take the time to let it do what it's supposed to do naturally, then we wouldn't need some of these other additives. Mm-hmm. So I remember when Olestra came out a number of years ago, there was a movie theater where the Ripple Lays or whoever it was that came out with this, they offered everyone a free bag of these chips that was made with Olestra as they entered a movie theater, and they were standing out in the hallway keeping track of how many people left the theater and went to the bathroom. And it was a remarkably high number of people that had a negative lower intestinal reaction to Olestra. And even with that, even the company who was making the product knew full well what to expect, they still didn't either stop doing what they were doing or, you know, be more upfront about it. And so...
Well, Don, you and I have, you and we have talked many times about how science can start with the best of motivation and the highest of goals and the purest of motives. But once money and lawyers get involved, it seems to be changed in the wrong direction more often than not. It's like it's stopped halfway, and you find something good that works, and as soon as there's a financial advantage to capitalizing on that scientific finding, it's locked into concrete. Even if the next 5 years says, no, we were wrong, or no, it turns out to be dangerous, there's so much momentum in producing products and designing new things and building, you know, cultural promotion around it and tailoring images around it that you can't get rid of bad science.
Well, and that's right. I think in this case of Olestra, the intention was to try to design a fat that, for example, you could fry potato chips and other things in that wouldn't be digested. And that's exactly what they did. Now, the problem was it started absorbing all your fat-soluble, in this case, vitamins. And so when you eat products like this that have been manufactured in that way, then there's some negative side effects. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the industry probably figured, well, you know, losing some vitamins isn't that bad. Of course, then you had diarrhea, which, you know, well, it's not life-threatening. Mm-hmm. And we've already pumped millions and millions of dollars into this program. It's not all that, you know, that fatal.
Well, and there's something about being I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, and we have an obese society, and so therefore, you know, all of these factors are playing into putting a product like this out in the market.
Should government's role be? What should be, or you can think of it as the legal system, should it be advisory, or should it actually ban things with the idea that it's protecting citizens of the U.S.? In this country, it seems to me we're happy by saying, you know, we're putting a warning label on the package. That should be enough. This could kill you, you know, to take the cigarette industry, for example, and yet, with the case of cigarettes, it hasn't been banned. It's still legal. But with some of these other things, that they're really, really optional. You go ahead and take the risk if you want.
Well, and if you put it on the label, and if it's clearly labeled that, you know, this product has this side effects, and if you're willing to live with that.
Should we be happy with that? Or do we need laws that ban or approve every substance that we consume?
You know, I think it's part of the problem is cultural, though, too, because usually the things that are bad for us are also the cheapest. For instance, it's a whole lot easier to feed a family macaroni and cheese. It's a lot cheaper to feed a macaroni and cheese than it is to go buy fresh fruits and vegetables and meat. And our priorities are kind of messed up in this country. We save money for a big screen TV, and we save that money by eating lots of processed foods, lots of milk that has artificial growth hormones in it. We make the cheap, easy choice with our food so that we have more money for non-essential things. Mm. And I really do think that it's mostly cultural. If you look at how much money the typical Ecuadorian spends on food out of their budget, or the typical, anybody in South or Central America or Europe for that matter, they spend far more percentage of their income feeding themselves and thus feeding themselves better than we do here, because we, our priorities are on big cars and big TVs and smartphones and you know, all the things that are non-essential. We're not hungry enough, in my humble opinion.
I did see a study recently that dealt exactly with that. It had pictures of families from all around the world with a caption with each, and they were basically in their kitchens, in their homes, behind a table full of the native foods they eat, fresh vegetables and fruits and canned things, things they buy at the store. And there would be a caption under each picture that told you precisely that, what percentage of their income, or in the dollar value, they would spend per month to feed the family. And there were some shocking differences. And you're right in that most of those places spend a much larger percentage of their monthly income on food than we do. So you're onto something. David, you've got probably some feelings about whether government should restrict our intake or simply advise against it on nasty stuff. What do you think?
Why don't you ask me about Ed Snowden again? I have always dealt with this, you know, on the horns of this dilemma. Do we want a more intrusive government telling us what to do with every little teeny tiny thing that we put in our bodies, or do we want to live in a free society that we make our own decisions? And I think that my first suspicion whenever I come across a difficulty or a problem or a challenge in society is that down below somewhere there's a government program that encouraged it. Now, right now, the WIC program is the one that says this is the stuff that we want single mothers to go out and buy, because this is the what we'll give you money for. And it's not fruits and vegetables. It's not good stuff. It's the, you know, and in most cases they give you a blank $200 a week or a month, and you buy whatever you can fit into there.
They did take snack foods off that list, though. Mm-hmm, they recently took potato chips and candy and lesser nutritional things off that list. So they are moving in the right direction there.
Oh, so another maybe 16, 17 generations will actually get somewhere. But at the base of it, we've got this institution that's telling us it's okay to eat this stuff. It's okay to put this stuff in your system. I'm the government. I'm here to help you. Well, I don't know that that's necessarily true. We are getting away from making our own decisions because we rely on somebody else to tell us what to do with ourselves, our bodies. And if it's a bureaucrat somewhere in Washington, oh, well, they must know what they're doing. They're making six figures and they got a corner office. Hmm. Well, that's nonsense.
Oh, Heike,
and we're getting away from making our own decisions about this stuff. Now, I'm back to, why do European countries ban some of these items when we don't? Or do they have better science than we do? I wonder if it's more people getting actually outraged or not outraged, but just not buying this stuff.
Or as Don may have suggested, maybe they're better educated than we are.
Or they just know that this stuff makes them feel bad, or they suspect it. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to have graduate degrees in nutrition to understand that if there's a little green stuff on the edge of this, it's probably bad for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why they spend more of their income on feeding themselves versus buying, you know, the latest iPhone version. I don't know, but I mean, I suspect that they are closer to taking care of themselves and making good, sound decisions about what they think is going to be healthy. And it's, you know, years of living and getting information from grandmama that said lives in the next house over. Mm-hmm. You know, we have all kinds of maladies in this country, and I continue to believe it has a great deal to do with letting somebody else make our decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Well, it's interesting too, because there's a dichotomy there, because the Europeans are far more regulated than we are. I mean, we're rapidly moving in that direction, and so you've got more regulations over in Europe than you do here, and the government pretty much, you know, tells you what to do, when you can do it, and how you can do it. But yet the people see, when it comes to food, seem to be, a lot more selective than we are. And I think, an educational program here would be, is in order. I think labeling, the food industry being required to label. Of course, we talked about labeling just GMO products.
Mm-hmm.
If we've given a choice, if I'm given a choice, do I, eat this non-GMO product or do I eat this GMO product? I'll go for the non-GMO product every day. But when you don't know, you're kind of left with what's ever on the food shelf. You can't even make that choice. And I think that's where, in this country at least, we have really gone off the deep end and not given the consumer at least the information so that they could decide for themselves.
Now, Heike, you brought an article to our attention the other day. It was actually a CBS television interview with a doctor, a medical doctor, who has just written a book. And it's his contention that all wheat that we consume these days is genetically engineered. And actually, he says poison. Now, I'm always a little on edge, a little on guard when I see they're selling a book, as opposed to just informing us of a recent scientific discovery. But in connection with that, he mentioned, and you mentioned, a paleo diet. Explain what that is to us.
Well, as best I can, because I'm not on the paleo diet, but think Atkins. If you remember the Atkins mm-hmm. craze, which was maybe about 7, 8, 10 years ago, and it comes back every once in a while. It's essentially no carbohydrates, meaning sugars or breads of any kind, no simple or complex carbohydrates, and then also no dairy. Mm-hmm. Atkins wasn't dairy-free, but the paleo diet basically takes you back to the food in its natural state. If it's hamburger, you're not doing anything other than grinding the hamburger up, but you're not cooking it or breaking it down or remanufacturing the hamburger.
Not processing it,
processing it. And a strawberry is a strawberry is a strawberry. You're not, you're not cooking it, cooling it, adding it, pureeing it.
That is the food process.
Yeah. So a paleo diet that's kind of the new craze right now. And as far as health crazes go, I'd say it's a probably better one because you're getting a balanced diet. Now, nutritionalists who are fed by the big machine that we've been picking on today, nutritionalists say, no, you need high fiber, you need lots of fiber, so you need to have those whole grains. Well, there's a lot of fiber in lettuce. There's a lot of fiber in an apple. There's a lot of fiber in natural foods that aren't processed. And so I think even a well-intentioned nutritionalist who might be influencing you in your doctor's office or might be influencing you because they influence the WIC program, I think they are also well-intentioned but misinformed too, because there's a strong push towards wheat and whole grains and rice and potatoes and starchy foods that have a whole lot less nutritional value than than you really need. And even with bread, bread is iron fortified. Well, if you get iron naturally in other ingredients, you don't need to go to your breads and cereals to get iron. I remember when iron was added and, that became the new thing. Well, now we got to eat a lot of cereal because we need our iron.
Well, actually, you're not old enough to remember, because it goes back to the 30s. Iron in particular is an interesting story, because once the process was discovered, all of a sudden the advertisers were saying, we suffer from iron deficiency anemia. Products like Geritol, iron supplements of all kinds came out, and they learned how to fortify milk and breads and cereals and just about everything with iron. But it wasn't until another 20 or 30 years had gone by that they discovered we had too much iron in our systems, and it was a major cause of prostate cancer in men.
Well, and why were we iron deficient? Was it coming off of World War II when we had no meat to eat?
It was before that. And who knows who knows if we were really iron deficient? It was simply a claim made, probably in some scientific circles. Maybe there was one or two studies. I don't know the precise history there. But once it got caught up in the money and the product and the R&D and the marketing, then it became accepted truth by everybody that we're short of iron. We need these supplements now. And who would know? We know what we're told. We believe it or we don't, and in this case, we believed it.
So, if Oprah says it's true, it's got to be true.
Well, yeah.
Well, I don't think she was around back then, but
but maybe Oprah's grandmother.
Yeah, there you go. Could have been.
I did a quick Google of how much we spend on our food, percentage of income, and it's quite interesting. The U.S. spends about 7% of its income on food. Canada is at 9%, and going across Europe, and into Asia, the United Kingdom only spends 8%, so just 1% more than we do. Germany is 11%, and then it goes through Europe into the teens. You get to Japan, and it's 14%, and then there's a big jump. Russia, 28%. China, 33%. And they're certainly being fed whatever the government gives them, and yet they spend more on their food. Mm-hmm. Jordan is 40%. And Azerbaijan, if I said that correctly, is 50% of their income just to feed themselves. So,
and there are probably lots of factors in that too, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. But it does make you think that if you're spending more of your income on food, you're probably more conscientious about what that food is. You're probably thinking about food a lot more than we do here in this country.
Make more educated, more careful decisions.
You'd think.
Mm-hmm. Most people just aren't shopping at the right stores.
Or they have lower incomes.
Yeah, they don't make a lot of money.
Dale, it's interesting. We're privileged to speak with Dr. Don Clark about this time every week. Don, again, a member of the board at creationmoments.com. I want to remind you of their website, which you can link to from ours if you're listening on brokenroadradio.com this morning. Feel free to click over there. You'll find a lot of resources of all kinds that relate to things like science versus faith and creationism versus evolution. It's a fascinating website with lots to offer, and we're always tickled to have Don on. We've really spent a lot of time on genetically engineered foods and science and money and legal things. I'm not sure we've solved anything yet, have we?
Well, no, we talked about it a lot, but I don't think we've solved any problems. Hopefully, we have made people more aware of the issues.
Well, people appreciate
it. Is it in our mission statement somewhere that we're solving something?
Well, I guess not. We're disseminating information here, and it's clear that people enjoy listening to Dr. Don because the traffic to the website under the audio archives page has been pretty impressive. People can go listen to any of our past conversations on audio archives, or you can listen to conversations from our other guests or other really really morning team members here every week. And the response has been very positive, especially on genetically engineered products. I think there's a lot of people looking into that right now, and a lot of information in the media on it right now. So maybe we're rethinking some of our positions on this. And I think we're on the right track in discussing it here. And Don, as always, we thank you for joining us today, and appreciate what you bring to the table. It's nice to have a scientific viewpoint on these things, and we'll check with you again in a week.
All right, sounds good, and it's been a pleasure to be here.
Good to talk to you, Don.
Instrumentally, music from Steve Bell on our Broken Road Radio Monday morning. Good morning to you.